Hello, welcome to the Gab and Jules show. Still no Gab Marcotti, still away. So instead, Nedim is here, and actually we should rename the show, no?
Yeah, maybe the Jules and Nedim show.
Yeah.
But, you know, you say the big show, I'll say the little show.
Okay, I know how this fair works. Enough. I love that. Big show today because the Champions League, obviously, this week was crazy.
Mm.
But like when we say crazy, it was crazy, especially the Liverpool-Real Madrid game, which will be our main segment, of course, but we will talk about everything else that happened this week. Plus, we'll have loads of quick hits. But really, we have to start at Anfield, you were, Nedim, as well.
Yes.
For what we've seen, amazing comebacks in recent years, remontadas, call it whatever you want. But usually they're over two legs. So the one leg, you know, someone is very good and dominating and big win, and then the second leg they turn it around.
Yeah.
We've rarely seen, if not, rarely, in the same game, such a different dynamic in Liverpool on top the first 15 minutes, 2-0 up, and after that, collapse.
Like, I think collapse is the best way to describe it. And when you think about the fact that Liverpool were at home, you know, they started that well. And don't get me wrong, it's Real Madrid. But we spoke in the last show, and you said this version of Real Madrid isn't like the all conquering one. It felt like it was last season. So I hold my hands up, and, you know, I'd been drinking the Kool-Aid. I was in the stadium. I could hear the fans. Everything sounded like it was prosperous. Everything was going to be great.
Yeah.
I may have sent you a text predicting what the score was going to be at 2-0.
Yeah, maybe you said that.
But I didn't. Stop. But the comeback for Real Madrid was amazing. Obviously, there was a mistake in there to make it 2-2. It's a great finish for Vinicius to make it 2-1. But then it's just the timing of those goals. That third goal from Real Madrid, it literally took, it felt like it took all the hope out of the stadium. And I think with Liverpool, we're so used to seeing them play the second leg at Anfield, having something to chase, being in good form. You know, that's a European night at Anfield. But instead, it's like a major collapse. I think most people don't remember the last time Liverpool conceded 5 goals at home in anything, let alone the Champions League.
Yeah, I mean, never, I think, in
exactly,
European
I don't
history,
think it's happened,
think,
but... Yeah. Yeah, there was so much to it, and I think as we continue to talk about it, I think we'll be able to get into some of the details as to why that happened, because there were a few masterful performances and a few horror shows as well, I think.
Yeah, and I think all the flaws that we've seen in the Premier League this season too often were exposed by a wonderful team that really, as we said on Monday as well, comes alive in those games in the Champions League, especially when they're under pressure, because to come to Real Madrid now, and we can talk about Modric at 37, Karim at 35, all of that, but for you in the stadium probably, and certainly for us watching on television, it felt that it just never panicked, even at 2 goals down. It felt almost like the lead in that team said, like, you know what, we've been there before, let's do our thing, and then we're going to do what we do. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, that's true. I think they sort of anticipated the pressure that would come from Liverpool at the start. They played through a lot of it.
Yeah.
They did, but then obviously they conceded the first goal. And then it's a mistake for the second goal. And I think the mentality around a mistake can be key, because for some clubs, they sort of feel down and sorry for themselves. But when it's a mistake, you know that a mistake's unlikely to happen again.
Yeah.
So if you keep doing things the right way, you're in with a chance. And I think the importance of them scoring the next goal was going to be key. But on the sideline, Ancelotti was just standing there at 0-0 the same way it was at 1-0 down, 2-0 down, 2-1, 3-2, 5-2, whatever. He was just so relaxed and so chilled out. And none of those players panicked, but it's because they've done it before.
Yeah.
And done it so many times before as well. I think it was a very, very impressive performance looking at it. I think the change of Alaba coming off and Nacho coming on was a big thing as well.
Instead of moving Camavinga back, which he could have done.
Exactly. And then some of the players really grew into the game. And by the towards the end, it was almost like showboating. They're just playing little triangles around Liverpool players and they couldn't even make
tackles. You know what amazed me is that they're a team and they play well as a team, but there's nothing special about what Ancelotti does tactically. I mean, there was a switch. Valverde, after I think the 55th minute, went to the left side of the midfield three because that was Liverpool's strength on that right with Trent and Salah and Henderson, just to make sure that was secured and safe, and Modric could go on the right where he would have less work to do defensively. But there's nothing like revolutionary or anything, but because individually they're all so good, I think they know that within a, let's say, like a normal tactical structure, which it is, it's a 4-3-3, but it's pretty normal, really. Yeah. then they've got one, they've got a bit of freedom to do whatever they want.
Yeah.
And the movement and everything, because they're also intelligent, but they're just also good individually.
Yeah.
And I just think, like,
is the way some of them were, like, receiving passes and moving it along, the decision making, understanding when to switch, when to keep it to the same side, not panicking, not just kicking it away. You know, it was amazing. But I think the thing that's getting slept on the most, I thought in that game, Liverpool were very passive after the first goal was scored. Say, Vinicius Junior finds half a yard.
Yeah.
That's a great finish. They could also could defend it maybe a little bit better.
Definitely.
There's obviously the mistake for the second. But who's got Militao for the third? How did the other goals get scored? Whereas for Real Madrid, every time Liverpool came into their area, there were bodies right there getting in people's faces. There was aggression from Militao, from Rudiger, from all those other players around it. But for Liverpool, as you saw with the, I think the Benzema's first goal, they've just played a 1-2 and nobody's near anybody at all. That didn't happen with Real Madrid the whole night. So I think the great stuff they did in terms of attack and having fluidity to move and sort of Modric being masterful, that's one thing. But Liverpool didn't look dangerous, and it's because of the way that they defended.
Yeah.
It was spectacular. I think Courtois ended up playing well. The back four was incredible come the end of it. And it's just like a boring thing to say, but that level of aggression is what Liverpool need if they want to get the season back on track. Because otherwise they'll be punished, because no way should they be conceding 5 goals at home in a game. It's 11 versus 11.
Sure. If you're half-time, okay, it's 2-2, and if you're Liverpool, you're disappointed because you were 2-0 up.
Mm-hmm.
At 2-1, after the Vinicius goal, there's that Henderson, Salah, maybe a chance for 3-1.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's 2-2. It could have been better. You could have gone back at 2-1 or 2-0 up, maybe. But it's still not the end of the world, right? If you're a Liverpool player, you go back to the dressing room, what kind of mindset do you think you're in? What kind of message do you expect from Klopp?
I think at 2-2, he won't make a big deal of the Alisson mistake, because Alisson would have made a big deal of it himself.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he knows that he's made it, so you can't really pile on that one too much. But I think Vinicius scored. I think he also had another shot which Alisson had to save.
Yeah, same one.
Very similar to that. But again, they started so well. They put Madrid very much on the back foot. It didn't necessarily make Madrid too uncomfortable, but you could see that there's something there should they try and be more aggressive.
Yeah.
So I think at 2-2, you're a bit disappointed, but you're focused to go and try and do it again. Start the second half the way you started.
So same intensity that the first 15 minutes.
It demand the same, if not more. Go out and start strong. Go and get in their faces again. Get the crowd on board, because that's the whole point of playing at home. If you give the crowd something to get behind, then it makes it a harder occasion for the opposition. So that's the mentality. Let's go and do it right, 100%, max effort. 5 minutes later, what was it? 3-2 to Real.
But how can you concede a goal like this straight after the break?
My God.
Because for the listeners who don't know, before the game on the big boards, you will have all the set pieces set up. So zonal marking, so and so plays. I guess they're ready for it, right?
Yeah, that's what
you know who you're marking before the free kick. By the way, Gomez, please don't give away stupid free kicks like that.
Yeah, it's a bad free kick to concede that early. And the thing is, he thought he won it as well. But again, Vinicius did very well. Yeah. But that wide free kick, there's always a point with corners and wide free kicks where you go from a zone to man marking. But it's about deciding where that point is.
Okay.
So they decided they were going to continue with zonal marking. But it doesn't suit that moment. Because from where Modric can see, he can see like 7 Liverpool players just in a line.
On the line, yeah.
Just in a line. So most of those guys are pointless, but the person who's not pointless is the one who's got Militao, who I think was Alexander-Arnold.
Yeah.
And in that moment...
And again, why would you ask him to mark?
Because that's what he would have been doing if it was a corner as a zone, so it's less dangerous. But now the thought of danger should be higher because it's closer.
Yeah.
But this is one thing which we're going to talk about here, which is about leadership and sensing how dangerous a moment is.
Definitely.
Because it's all well and good to say, right, everybody get in your positions. But now the human instinct needs to kick in and try and figure out what's going to happen next. You know, it's not just like if the manager says we're going to line up as a 4-3 and so on and so forth. Like formations, they're great on paper till you play the game and there's opposition there, so you have to move.
Yeah.
Like, figure it out. Like, how many people are in the box? Oh, it's 3 people in the box. Who's got them? So it's Trent, this guy, that guy, that guy.
Yeah, where's the danger?
Where can the ball go? Can he score against Alisson on this near side? Probably not. So can we get our line a bit higher? Can somebody just step out of the zone and go and mark someone? Can we go and fill the areas that really matter?
But I'm amazed a team like Liverpool, someone like Van Dijk, doesn't even think like that. So what, they had a brain freeze and they...
Complete brain freeze, a lot of them. the lot of them, because it only takes one person to acknowledge danger to be able to change the impact of any particular like moment. Only it would take one person standing higher, but then instead a free header, six yards out.
That's ridiculous.
That's with so many bodies around. But that's what Liverpool were. Thought after they conceded the first two goals, they were passive. There were bodies around, but they weren't doing anything. And I think as they look back at that goal, it's a horror show, because they all know themselves, those players, that if the man wasn't yours, you could tell someone to deal with it. And if he could be yours, like Alexander-Arnold could have run with him.
Yeah.
Van Dijk could have stepped forward. Other centre-backs could have stepped forward. Someone could have blocked the line so that Modric had nowhere to play it to. Like, make Modric's delivery into the box more predictable and less dangerous by blocking the areas which he could play it into. Then instead, Modric puts a ball into the box, which shouldn't be a good ball.
Yeah.
That should be cleared by one, two, three Liverpool players. But then instead, as I say, it's almost like they're reliant upon instruction at this moment in time instead of using their instincts. So they're all in the right...
Because they've lost confidence, you think? Or because
possibly.
Because they must have had that instinct before. You haven't...
Yeah.
They've been such a great team.
Yeah, but just it's weird because they're historically, over the last few years, they don't concede that many goals. So to concede five at home and some of the goals in a way that they did.
Yeah.
Like, it's you should never... If it's literally 7-3 in the box, no way a goal should be scored.
Yeah.
But some of those players may think, well, I was standing in the right spot, so I did nothing wrong. But in totality, they all did something wrong because somebody was allowed to be free and score in there.
I mean, what I think, certainly, to me, what felt very obvious is the lack of leadership.
Mm.
And in that sense, I'm very disappointed with the Henderson, with the Van Dijk, with maybe Alisson to some extent, Robbo maybe. Even Klopp looked to me completely, like, far too quiet on the touchline after the third goal. When it's you're 3-2 down, you could have scored a third one, 3-3, there's no away goals anymore.
Mm.
You basically go to Madrid 0-0 and anything is possible then.
Yeah.
And yet, I didn't see any reaction, I didn't see anybody shouting, I didn't see anything. And I don't know, and he felt that the stadium just like...
Yeah, it did. The stadium did, well, I think after the fourth one was when it got really quiet.
All right.
Before that, in fairness, they'd been singing, and then come the end, they were singing, they clapped the fans, they clapped the players off, but they also clapped the Real Madrid players off.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They were clapping for Benzema and Modric.
Yeah,
because they understood what they just did to their team. But I think for Klopp, he's in an interesting situation because he can prepare his team for a game, but as he watches them out on the field, he's now relying on them to actually just do the job itself. And picture this, you've worked on set pieces all week or whatever, and then you see that goal go in to make it 3-2.
It's deflating, yeah.
Yeah, and you're looking like, in that moment, what more could he have done? He's literally set them up to give them the chance creative. But then the stuff after that, in terms of trying to G up the players and so on, I think they were trying to do it. But again, this is the thing about confidence within football. The moment there's even the slightest doubt in your mind, the easiest thing to do is to take a step back. But when you take a step back, all of a sudden, Camavinga, Modric, Valverde, they move the ball how they want.
True.
Benzema moves it how he wants.
This is the wrong team to play against when the scenario is like that.
If there's any doubt in your mind against a team like this, then this is what happens.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they went toe-to-toe with them and they were feeling confident, it could have been a better game. Maybe Madrid would have still won. But all of a sudden, you're seeing those little triangles. Then Ceballos comes on, little triangles here, little triangles there. They're moving it this way, moving it that way. Benzema's come in. And all the while, you know that if you decide to overcommit and go for it, Vinicius Jr. hasn't come back. He's waiting on the halfway line. And if he's up there, that means Benzema's around.
Yeah.
And then you get moments like you did for the fifth goal.
It's crazy. And I think, and we said it last year, I remember, because they did it last season against City and against Chelsea and against PSG and all of that. They just smell blood, I think. And they know exactly. And that's why this team amazes me, because this is not the greatest team in European football history.
No.
But they still have something special that I don't think we've ever seen with anybody else before. That sort of calmness, never kind of panicking mode, and the ability of just punishing every little mistake that you would make.
Yeah.
And having a bit of luck, because the fourth goal is, I don't think Karim's shot is even on target.
No.
And
no,
then Gomez, who's had a shocker. And sorry, Joe, the other day I said you were a bad player, and I stand by it. But... And so that goes for Real Madrid when it really should not have been a goal.
Yeah, that's good fortune, but you still need to be able to take the shot for it to happen.
Yeah, and for sure. And the movement before, as you said.
And he took an uncontested... Yeah, so they did I think it was a 1-2 around Fabinho.
Yeah.
And then Benzema's having a free shot inside the 18-yard box. Like, these are things that should never happen. So the luck has gone against Liverpool, but they could have maybe had better luck if they were more aggressive with how they tried to defend it.
Yeah, 100%. Do you think physically... they just could not do more than what they did Liverpool in terms of the intensity, what they want. I still think that Cody Gakpo doesn't know how to press. I think that he's willing to do, and I think he's got that energy, and he said, yeah, I'm happy, just tell me, you want me to go and run, and I can run. But running and pressing are two very different things. And at times, he looked like he was going to go and put pressure, but he never looked behind to see where the angle of the pass would be.
Yeah.
So too often, he would go and sprint towards Militao, who just had an easy ball to put to Camavinga because he didn't do it right.
But at that point, though, you'd hope, like, pressing is key when you've got information behind you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So if he's going and he's leaving something open, the person behind him should tell him not to go.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's that sense of, it's a little bits of the chain there in terms of communication that can make a big difference. And when they go and press, because it's Real Madrid again, there's just this fear when Vinicius Jr. is standing on the halfway line, is Trent Alexander-Arnold going to go and support a Salah press behind him? Or is he going to be thinking, well, if this goes over my head, then we're finished? And that's something that Madrid have and certain other teams have, where no matter how aggressive you want to be, there's always an element of risk.
Definitely.
And when things aren't going your way, you then decide to go against that risk and say, well, we'll be more conservative. But then that allows other players to then start controlling the midfield. You know what I mean?
Because when you have both the threat of Vini and Benzema, I guess, on the counter, and Modric, who is press resistant, so you can press him, but he won't lose
it's
the
irrelevant,
ball.
Irrelevant, yeah.
Then, which leads us nicely, well done, the midfield. Mm. Because you mentioned, you know, if you're a forward trying to press, you need communication from and information from behind. If you're a defender like you were, you need the relationship between your defense and your midfield, and who's protecting you in a way, who's in front of you, who's going to help you and not help you, is also very important. Have Liverpool been so average this season because their midfield is just not good enough anymore? And certainly in that game, did they also lose that game because they were outplayed by the Real Madrid midfield?
I think come the end, they were very much outplayed by the Madrid midfield, but I think a lot of teams would be.
It's not a surprise.
Yeah, that's the thing. If the bar of success is like Real Madrid midfield when they're in full flight and winning, like, you know, like Camavinga, Valverde, and players like this, they played well, but they got better as they were winning as well.
You know what I mean?
Front running's so much easier than, you know, to be chasing. But I think from a midfield standpoint, I personally didn't think the balance was there with Henderson, Bacetic, and Fabinho.
No, I agree.
It doesn't quite feel, for me, like attacking enough, I think. Defensively, I think it can be okay, but how good is the press? Fabinho, if he's going to be playing in the six, he knows that he can't overcommit.
Yeah.
Because Benzema's the false nines at times. Mm. You know, he made some great runs in behind as well, which I saw.
Yeah.
But when he's drifting into the space behind you, you kind of want to take a step back. So then you're leaving the job for the others. Like, is Modric, Valverde and Camavinga versus Henderson and Bacetic, an 18-year-old?
Yeah.
That's not going to go too well. And then I think as I look at the season overall, I don't know how many games where they've been completely outplayed in midfield, because, you know, the Premier League on a week-to-week basis doesn't pose some of the, like, best midfield threes you've ever seen. Like, the good players, maybe to a certain extent some might be outworked, but we don't know what the data is.
Yeah.
But again, some of it's just to do with, like, just, like, it's so hard to quantify, but, like, confidence and belief in something. If you know you're going to go to try and press and you'll be beaten, you won't go and press.
Yeah.
But that means that the other team will have the game more of how they want. You know, like, if you would say you were coaching a side and you tried to teach them this press, and every time they did it, they were beaten in the press, you'd be like, you should probably stop pressing.
Yeah, 100%.
But then that plays into the hands of the opposition.
Yeah, for sure.
And what would you say Liverpool's best midfield three is?
When everybody's fit.
Yes.
As you know, I'm not the biggest of Henderson's fans.
Yeah.
I would have Fabinho, because I think Fabinho hasn't been good because around him players haven't been good.
Yeah.
If Thiago is fit, Thiago has to play.
Yeah.
And then the third one, I've always thought that Naby Keita could have a role to play, but clearly not.
Mm.
So I think there's a problem that it's not just now who's available, who's not, who could be good. It's a problem that the problem for me is that they haven't addressed the situation from a midfield point of view.
Mm.
I think the last midfielder they signed was Alex Chamberlain, something like that, 5 years ago, something ridiculous. I mean, how can you be Liverpool and not have thought in the last 4 years, let's say, that midfield, at some point, especially after losing Wijnaldum, needed something more.
But you say this, but there's an element of recency bias to this, because we go back 1 year, one calendar year, and they could have won 4 trophies.
Yeah, no, for sure.
With that same midfield. Like, I know age is a thing, but how much is it a thing to the point where you literally fall off a cliff that much? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think it's the... Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
And I don't want to be right about this. You know, I'm a City guy and whatever.
Yeah,
but there's I don't know what it is. And interestingly, I think as every game passes with results like this, I don't think Klopp knows what it is. Because he'll train his team to play in a certain way, whether it's physical, mental, and so on and so forth. But now you're battling whereby maybe your players don't have the same confidence that they did. But also, the thing about football, your confidence, if it drops down 10%, that 10% goes to the opposition, because now they'll believe that they can beat you. And when teams believe they can beat you, the showing that they put on against you is something which you wouldn't expect usually when you're in the ascendancy. Do you get what I'm coming from?
Especially, I think, with Real Madrid and this sort of midfield battle that...
It was barely a battle coming the end of it.
Yeah, Liverpool maybe won for the first 15 minutes because they put Camavinga under pressure. They put Modric under pressure, and that worked. And you and I were wondering about Camavinga. I said, okay, how is he going to respond to this? And he did really well. And we talked about Valverde and the switch with Modric to just make them even more solid defensively. I mean, Modric is 37.
Allegedly,
yeah, because I think they cooked his passport. He's actually like 32.
Yeah,
you know, he wanted just to be older at school for the girls. But like, I mean,
it felt,
even if you think the Liverpool midfield was not good,
yeah, we don't have to talk about that.
But it was a man against kids.
For me personally, and this is not me coming as like a big Madridista or anything like that, but it felt like a privilege to watch him.
Of course,
because the way he was playing was different to how anyone else plays. His understanding of the game, the movements, the little touches to manipulate the ball. You know, the people who control the ball and there are people who manipulate it. He manipulates it.
Yeah.
Every touch is with intent. The outside of his foot, the inside of his foot, the sight for the passes, knowing when to switch, when to go short, when to go long, when to dictate the tempo, spaces to find yourself in. Like, it was unbelievable. And to add to it, so the fifth goal comes from him stealing the ball from Fabinho and then running away from Bacetic, an 18-year-old. He's young enough to be his son, you know. And you could say, oh, well, you know, it's a mistake, it's this, that and the other, but it's the understanding of how to manage the game. A player of that ability with that level of experience is, like, at times borderline unplayable.
Mm.
You can try and make it as hard for them as you can, but they're still, like, he's different tier.
But then I think, I guess, he's a Ballon d'Or winner, so
yeah,
even
he's different.
He's on another level anyway.
Benzema as well, and you know, this is the counter argument. When some people say Liverpool's midfield's aging and this, that, and the other, I think it was 7 of the top 10 contenders for the Ballon d'Or were all above the age of 30.
Yeah.
So we can say that if we say that this midfield's too old, but then all these players who are great are all older, like, how does that balance out? Because just because you're older doesn't mean you can't have impact. Benzema, as you said, is 35 years of age. A few years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, he's washed. Like you say, the 35-year-old, get him out. This is the age you get the pension in England, and he's just won the Ballon d'Or. You know what I mean? Just think about that from that perspective.
And not every player can last as long as Modric and Benzema and still have that level.
Yeah. No, but the level, though, I think... Well, you tell me, was that Benzema's best ever season last season?
Yeah.
So he's gotten better. And the thing about getting better, it comes with experience.
You see, I don't think so.
You don't think so?
So what, you mean this season compared to last season?
No, last season. Yeah. That's the thing, it's experience.
Yeah.
Because even though physically you might not be what you were in your 20s, now you really understand how to control the game. Yeah. Like, Bacetic in that game, he lost the ball just before the Alisson mistake.
Yeah.
He did something really good.
And
then he tried to do something else, which was fancy.
And then they were sleeping as well, by the way. I mean, please.
You just wear studs, come on. Just pop studs on. But that little mistake there, Modric wouldn't make.
Yeah.
He'd win the ball back. Then he'd know the decision to make.
But then maybe again, maybe Modric at 18 would have made, you know, played for Dinamo Zagreb.
100%.
100%. Again.
So that's why I think for a Liverpool midfield, if people say it's aging, well, it should be more experienced. And should be able to understand how to win a midfield battle. And maybe if you go up against younger people, they might have the legs on you. But it doesn't necessarily mean that it should be able to just dominate you at all. Because in the way football works, say if we played football now and we played against a younger group of people, I'd always back the older ones to win because they know how to win. The younger ones have the ability to like play well.
Yeah.
But can they win?
They
didn't know what it takes. Yeah. You know what I mean?
They'll
look at you and say, "Are you finished?" And also, my question to you, if you were Jurgen Klopp now, how would you set up Liverpool to go to the Bernabeu 3 goals down?
I mean, let me just talk about Benzema before we address the second leg and club, just because on Benz, and as you know,
it's alright when you can call him Benz.
He reposts my Instagram stories.
I was hating when I saw that.
He's my guy. We're good friends, so I will always be biased. But it's fine. If you don't want, you could just not listen for the next 90 seconds instead. I just think again, he's not fully fit.
Yeah,
because he hasn't really been fit this season.
Yeah,
he didn't play at the weekend. He's now in really good form. He's scored 12 in 12 now, including that brace. I just think that for him to keep scoring those very important goals in the Champions League, he's on 12 goals in the last 8 knockout stages games of the Champions League. So, like,
it's not bad.
He had not scored in the group stages.
Yeah.
And but people were like, oh, he hasn't scored. And he was like, come on, it's coming. I know it's coming. And then he came at the right time again. You know, he scored in 18 consecutive Champions League campaigns. Only him and Messi have scored at least one goal in the last 18 years in the Champions League. It's just remarkable. And I think, and I said to him, like, I mean, there's a point where it can't continue like that. I mean, I don't know. I wish, because there would be a point where, as a genius as he is, and I really think that, you know, he's a genius in terms of football, that looking after his body so well like he did in the last 5 to 6 years, really, because he... Even now he says, like, you know, I wish I understood earlier, and maybe it was the same for you in your career.
Yeah, 100%, yeah.
About all the invisible work that I should have done. Even if I'd done it at 20 instead of starting at 28.
Yeah.
Why I ate, how much I slept in the day and in the night, you know, all the recovery work, all the gym work, all of that. He said, I'd be even better now than what I am. And I'm like, this is incredible. And I was just so happy for him to have that kind of impact.
So what's the saying? Kareem the dream.
That's right, baby. That's right. Right, second leg. They can't, Liverpool, I mean, anything.
You're not a stop now. You're Liverpool manager, so don't be talking all negative. You're Liverpool manager.
Okay.
What do you say? How's the setup and what do you say to your team?
I don't have glasses anymore. I did my eye operation. I said to them the usual cliche, if we score early, anything is possible.
But you don't believe it.
I don't believe it. Right now, and sorry, Liverpool fans, I don't believe that anybody in that dressing room believe that they can do it.
Okay.
I really don't.
So you don't think they can think in their minds they can win by 3?
No.
You
can't rattle this Real Madrid team. You can't. Champions League final, they know too well, Liverpool, that when you think they're on the ropes, when you think... You still can't score against them, and then they score a goal and they win the Champions League final. They can't be rattled. So what? You're going to score one at the Bernabeu, and they're going to still be like, we're going to beat you 3-1, and they have that in them. So I think having that gap to bridge against Real Madrid, even more at the Bernabeu, is impossible. If Liverpool had won 2-1, for example, you could say, okay, they will have to attack, it would be different. Now, when you have to go and chase the game and try to rattle them to make that grind back, I think it's impossible.
Do you think it would have been the same if it finished 5-3? Because in the stadium, it felt like it was really important for them to get a goal, to get another goal. It really did. Even though, you know, the task is still very, very difficult. A 2-goal deficit just feels just far different.
Yeah,
to
I
a
think
three.
Psychologically, you're right. 3 feels like away from home.
Yeah, and I was expecting, again, it's because I'm surrounded by 50,000 Liverpool fans, but I was expecting them to score and for there to be a big celebration.
Yeah.
Because, like, it felt like there was something there. And I think even though it was a terrible result, if they would have scored that last goal, there's just a slight bit of doubt that could exist. But would you... So is what you're saying then you just change the whole team? If you don't believe they can win, then why send out the strongest team?
Not the strongest team, but I'd probably make... Because you don't want to be humiliated either. You've already been... This is a humiliation.
Yeah,
you lose 5-2 at home.
Yeah.
It's the worst ever defeat you had in Europe.
Yeah,
it's just 100%. Like... You were 2-0 up. Mm-hmm. The whole world was watching, and then that happened.
Yeah,
you can't be humiliated a second time in the space of 3 weeks. So you just try. You go there and make your team and your fans proud. Maybe you win 1-0, but to come back and qualify, which you'd have to either win by 3 and go to pens, or win by 4, which. Like, come on.
And that is why Julien Laurent is not a manager.
Well, what would be your message?
What would be my message?
Klopp said it's over anyway, and he might not say that.
He said that.
Yeah.
Yeah, he won't say that to the player. To be fair, if he thinks it's over, then he'll make changes for the second game. He'll make lots of changes for the second game.
Yeah.
Because if he sends out the strongest team, he doesn't believe it's over, because otherwise it's a wasted fixture, is it not?
Yeah.
So I think for that, you know what Real Madrid do, you know what the occasion is going to be like, and if you genuinely believe you're going to win, then just go for it. Because I think for me, the idea of embarrassment doesn't matter when you're already arriving there embarrassed. If the game is more or less done in the minds of 90% of people, whether it finishes 5-2 again or you win 1-0, whatever, like, just try and win a game of football. Gather it as a good experience for the players, because say if they play well at the Bernabeu, who's to say they can't play well between then and the end of the season?
Yeah, true, yeah.
You know? So I think you have to go there in an attempt to win. And if you win enough to, say, win a tie, great. But I wouldn't necessarily be thinking, oh, this is all said and done, because that game...
So I think they can win there. They can go and win there 1-0 or 2-1 maybe. But to qualify, I don't think they're capable of qualifying. That team.
Yeah. How about if Liverpool were 2-0 up with 10 minutes to go?
Again, I don't think this...
It's because you're a Liverpool hater, that's why.
No, I would love Liverpool to go through. Listen, for me, the more English clubs...
That was a lie. How can Benzema be a boy and you hope for Liverpool to go through?
Because I want English clubs to do well. I want English clubs to do well. You know, it's good for me if English clubs do well. It's good for you. It's good for us.
Well, yeah, I suppose you're right.
But you know, I'm also very interested in is the impact of that humiliation can have. So, it's the Madrid derby for Real Madrid against Atletico Madrid. Karim was saying that if you thought that maybe on the flight home to Madrid from Liverpool, you know, they were like super happy because they were all asleep and already had moved on. You know, it was a 5-2 win.
Business trip.
Exactly. They just inflicted Liverpool their worst ever defeat in Europe. And yet it looked like they just played a friendly somewhere in Asia before the season started. It was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But like, I want to see what kind of impact that win will have on their derby against Atletico. Mm. And Liverpool, they go away on Saturday night at Palace, where, you know, the crowd is hostile, where you will have to show some sort of response, because if you're not good again...
I told you, man. Everyone now, from the moment you play badly and it's televised and everybody sees it, everyone loses a bit of respect that they had for you. Mm. So Liverpool going down to Palace this season is very different to what it was last season or the season before. And Palace themselves, they need some results. And they'll think, go and get in their faces and see how they react.
Yeah.
You know, even if you were down to them, have belief, because we've seen that people can come back at them. Yes, we don't have Modric or Benzema or Vinicius, but we have this crowd and we can make them uncomfortable.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's going to be the goal for every team between now and the end of the season when they play against us. Humongous game, for sure.
Right, enough Liverpool and Real Madrid, Nez. What about some quick hits?
Allez, let's go.
Manchester City and RB Leipzig finished their first leg tie with a draw in Germany. What did you make of it?
I think a more realistic depiction of the game was the second half. I thought the first half, the fact that City had like 75% possession, didn't turn the ball
RB
over.
RB Leipzig were still in the dressing room.
They were there, but I only knew they were there because I could hear the fans. You know, the players themselves, that was a very, very weird showing.
Yeah.
But, you know, they reacted in the way you'd expect them to. There's no way you can put out two halves of football like that. So they came forward a lot more in the second half, as the way a team should be when they're at home, especially in the knockout game. Sorry, in the first leg of a game like that, and that was better. I think City made a few more unforced errors in the second half, but you know, a 1-1 draw away from home isn't the worst result ever, because you know, a lot of people don't know much about Leipzig, and that's perfectly fair because they don't track Bundesliga. But when we talk about three teams who were, I think, level on points at the top in Union, Bayern, and Dortmund, Leipzig are 4 points off it as well.
Yeah, they're just behind.
So, they are a good side, a very good side. That's what
Guardiola said. He said, did you really expect us to come and win 5-0 here?
Yes, they did. And that's the problem.
But that should not be the case.
That's the problem. And I think some of that comes from people's overestimation of teams like City and underestimation of any team outside of England. You know, the belief is you should just travel around Europe and dominate everyone. Yeah, but as we'll talk about later, not every English team has their way in Europe, do they? So,
definitely.
But anyway, Jules, a lot of City fans are not happy with two decisions from the referee, allowing the Guardiola goal and not giving a City penalty right at the end. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, for me, the Guardiola goal should never have stood.
Really?
I don't understand. Like, I think he jumps earlier than Ruben Diaz.
Yeah.
But then he stays in the air as long as Michael Jordan, because because at some point he's just like, you know, clearly pushes.
Shoulders, yeah.
And you know, maybe he would have won the header regardless. I don't know. But I think he hits the ball where he does because he's himself up.
Yes.
If he doesn't push himself up, I don't think he hits the ball as well as he did. And I'm not sure the ball goes in the way it is.
That's a good point. That's a good point, because I saw it and I saw his hands on his shoulders. But like, I've also, depends which league you're in, because say when I've played in the Championship, that's five times a game. Literally, it's the ball's going to the back post, you're in trouble. But then also, Edison got caught underneath the ball.
Yeah.
And in that moment, Diaz did as well. And I think Vardiol, he jumped early. But yeah, he did stay up in the air for just that fraction too long.
It was literally MJ. Like,
we're not all like specialists in physics, but something feels a little bit off there. But the penalty, though... So I thought they couldn't give it because the final whistle had gone.
No. Remember the Man United-Brighton game, for
exactly,
example? Or other cases like that.
So when I saw the replay, all of a sudden I was like, oh, I guess that I thought that was a penalty. What did you think?
Yeah.
I
mean, it's like another sport. It's like playing volleyball. I think it's Henrich.
Yeah.
And maybe the goal comes... It looks like he's scared of the ball and he goes like that. But he's clearly... Yeah. He hits his two arms.
So why don't you think they gave it?
I don't know. Apparently VAR didn't even check.
Really?
Yeah. That's what Peter Walton, who's the referee on BT Sports, said. He has a screen that is linked to the VAR... signalization, if you were, like, you know, and he said that it was not checked. So either they missed it, either there's another angle where he hits the
shoulder
as well as the arm. I don't know, but from the angle that we saw,
this looks like a clear.
It looked like he's, you know, playing handball or something like that. I think Pep was asked at the end, and he said, I need to see it again, which I'm not sure is true because I think he knew very much. But he said, but we know what happened, as if like we know that those are not given to us.
I know.
In Champions League, which...
One of my friends, he's like a big City fan and United hater, yeah. And he mentioned how it could have been given after the whistle. And I was like, no, I'm not sure it can. So then when I looked online to see it, and it was Man United at Old Trafford, I didn't even mention that's where it was. But I said, sorry, yeah, I was wrong. Because that just adds to conspiracy, doesn't it?
Oh, man. And also in that game, Ned, the Haaland debate... continues. He had 22 touches, only made 11 passes. He had one shot in that second half. No shot on target, because that was just wide. And people are talking about it. So you and I agree, to be fair, before we both answer. Where do we start then?
So I think people always seem to know his touches when he doesn't score. That's the first point of focus, because they couldn't tell how many touches he had in games where he scores 2, 3, whatever.
Yeah. But I guarantee you, it's not many more.
No, because that's the nature of how Man City play and how some of these teams play. Because he's the focal point, so he's the end game. He's not the part where he just drifts into midfield and does whatever, because they don't need him for that. So he's not going to have as many touches as other players, even if City have a million passes. If they've got the license to be able to play it to him continually. Like, where's the opposition? So I understand why his touches will be lower. I think at times he gets frustrated because maybe they could play him in. But they're just averse to that risk at this moment in time because they understand the value of possession. But he continues to make the right runs. And on a different day, he probably scores. If he scores, we lo and behold, not know how
he
many touches he has.
32 and 32. So you can't...
It's not enough.
But he has to be...
No, it's not
that
enough.
Debate about, like, they may be not as good with him, or he needs to adapt. Adapt to what? 32 goals in 32 games. Like, he's there to score goals. So Mahrez on French television after the game said, he's not here to touch the ball 70 times, which I think he's right. He's there to score the chances that will be created for him.
Yeah.
In a game like this one, there's no chances for him. He's frustrated. Clearly, you could see at the end he was frustrated. But, your job is to score the chances.
That's every striker. Every striker's doing the same. In the first half of that Liverpool game, for the first 20 minutes, Benzema was making some really good runs in behind and they weren't playing it. Do you know what he was? Frustrated.
Yeah, of course.
That's the role of the number nine. You think you make the best run that's ever been seen.
Yeah.
If you don't receive the ball,
that's a really good point.
Are you going to be like, it's okay. But this is the way it's going to go. This is the Haaland mania. Napoli took a big step towards a place in the quarterfinals with a 2-0 victory at Eintracht Frankfurt. And it could have been more, Jules.
Yeah, it could have, Nets. They missed a penalty. They hit the post. They played for 11 with 11 men against 10 after the Colomwani red card for Frankfurt. Was a stupid foul, by the way. I hope the kid learns.
Mm.
But it's just Napoli. I mean, 2-0, I think they're safe and dry. They're going to go back home. And they're too good for Frankfurt, which we kind of knew before. But still, just watch them play again. It's just a pleasure.
Yeah.
That second goal is amazing. The ball from Zombo Anguissa to Kvaratskhelia, the back heel to Di Lorenzo. Zombo Anguissa, if you're a Fulham fan, maybe, and watch him play. Or if you're a Marseille fan and saw him play, like, you won't recognise him. He's one of the best right now midfielders in Europe, without a doubt. It's incredible what that team is doing. And I think they're on their way to the quarterfinals. Four English clubs. Zero wins?
Why is there a big smile on your face?
What's going on here? Yeah. Are you worried?
No, I'm not. I'm not worried. I think of the four clubs to not win. You know, we're talking about Spurs and Milan. You're looking at Dortmund and Chelsea, City, Leipzig. The only issue for me, like a big issue, is the Liverpool-Real Madrid one.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be surprised if three English teams got through. but they obviously still need to perform as well. But worry, do I look like
it's just for all the talk of like, oh, the Super League already exists, is the Premier League, and they're too dominant, they've got too much money. Yeah, no, I'm with you, but you know what I mean? Like,
I know what you're saying. On the surface, it doesn't look great, but you know, there's still time, still a second leg. Let's not overreact just yet.
Yeah.
Inter Milan leave it late to beat Porto at San Siro, Jules, and the hero is Romelu Lukaku.
He is, and remember on Monday we said that he scored for the first time in like 600 days or something at San Siro. Now he's got 2-2. And I thought it was a really good game, to be fair, because Onana and Diogo Costa in goal were outstanding. Two incredible saves. One with Costa with his hand like that, and then the double save by Onana in the second half was outrageous, really. And when you thought it was going to be 0-0 and Porto had Otavio sent off, Lukaku popped up, great header, and then on the rebound he scores the goal. Good for him as well. I think they will need him to be efficient, to score, to be involved, even if he started on the bench and Dzeko and Lautaro started up front. It's good for Inter to have him with that confidence, you know, and scoring again.
Yeah.
The UK government published on Wednesday night a white paper on the governance of English football and the introduction of an independent regulator. Now, them, the Premier League clubs are not too happy. Do you think this is what football need in this country?
I don't know, because who's it for? Who's the independent regulator for? If the clubs themselves aren't happy, then is it going to make the game better? And who's it going to be better for, would you say?
So that's what they think. They think you would avoid like a Bury, for example. You know, people, a club have to disappear because they were badly run by an owner or not in the right conditions. They want the fans to have a bit more of a voice. So basically they want to avoid all the negativity that you see surrounding some football clubs in terms of debts, going bankrupt, not paying players, the fans not having a say in it, all that kind of thing.
I think in some ways it's good to involve the fans, but then a lot of fans aren't specialists in sort of like football business anyway. Sure. I think fans are very good at football, but these are really big football clubs that run in ways which most of us can't even comprehend.
Yeah.
So I think to try and lean that way, it's great. I think some of it feels like it's fan PR, but in the end, I'm sure the desired outcome will come. And if it ends up being something that costs English football, then I don't think it would be the right decision as such. But we'll see, we'll see. So Jules, we spoke the other day, but still, no ban for Julian Nagelsmann.
No.
After he confronted the referee Tobias Veltz in the dressing room at the weekend. He only received a big fine. Is he a lucky boy?
Oh, lucky boy, Nagelsmann. I mean, some would say, some have already said in Germany that, he was Bayern, so he was protected because
Are you
Bayern.
Some? Are you some?
No.
Are you somebody else?
No. I mean, I think he should have been banned from my list again. Okay. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Yeah.
The guy, smashes the door, goes and insults everybody and saying, and I know he was frustrated by it, but you made a really good point. I think you made a good point that the red card happened in the 8th minute.
Yeah.
I can't remember, or maybe on the FC show. And so, 8th minute, you can be frustrated, your player is sent off, you don't think it's a red card. But then, you're still that angry? Really? I know you lost
the game.
Result.
That's
but
the
you know
result.
What I mean? You go mad like that?
It's the result, yeah.
90 minutes later?
Yeah. I can't take that point because it wasn't mine.
Okay, but so it must have been someone on the show. But I think he's lucky. €50,000 fine, which he will have to pay, obviously, from his own bank account. Which is a lot. It's a heavy fine, but I think he should have been banned. You can't talk to
referees. How long would you ban him for?
A couple of games, one game, maybe just one game. But at least just by principle, you can't talk to referees. Whether you're Nagelsmann, the Pope, Nedim Onuwa, I don't care. There's a point where you have to be punished for.
Turns out, if you've got the money, you can do whatever you want.
Clearly. So Azpilicueta had to go to hospital on Saturday during the Southampton game because of a big concussion, if you remember, and good news, he's back home now and look good.
Yeah, very, very, very good news. I think it was alarming to see the way that he went down. Yeah. And, the collision itself, it wasn't on purpose.
It was
still
the overhead kick.
It's tough to watch and you really worry for people's safety. You hope that, he's been evaluated correctly and he's had the best care that he can. You hope that he's, confident enough to get back out there on the field because we want to see him. But then also, imagine what the feeling is like when you go out and step out there again. What happens when the ball's up in the air? Does he have the bravery and confidence to go for headers and all this stuff? I think it's definitely a step in the right direction. Health always matters, and hopefully he can get back to doing the job that, we assume that he really loves.
Yeah.
More scans on Neymar's ankle have revealed ligament damage, Jules.
Yeah, that's right. We mentioned a bit on Monday. That was the fear, really, in Paris, PSG, that initially they thought there was nothing too serious. And I don't think the ligament damage is too bad, really. His ankle was really swollen. They had to wait for the to be less swollen before doing the more scans. The Bayern game is in two weeks now, less than 2 weeks actually, because it will be Wednesday, and I just don't think he will make it. Which is bad. I know what you're going to say, because you're looking at me. I know exactly what you're thinking.
I don't know what you mean.
Like I said, I don't think the M&M can play well together at the same time. But if you can have a fit Neymar, it's always better.
Who replaces him?
I don't know. I think he will go with Mbappe and Messi up front, and then just strengthen the midfields, especially because Bayern have really good in midfield. So you can put, for him, I think he would play with a back three, with the two wing backs, and then that enables you, instead of playing 3-4-3, and maybe that have that unbalance, you'll have a very strong midfield of five, really, and three with the two wing backs. So you can have Vitinha, Danilo, and Verratti, for example, and you'll be a bit more.
Sounds like that's what you want.
Solid. Yeah, that's what I want. If I was the PSG manager.
Get well soon, now. Get well soon.
Erik ten Hag had dinner with Sir Alex Ferguson the other night in Manchester, and obviously they were seen together, photographed together, as you would expect. And ten Hag said it was really good to feel like supported by Sir Alex. He does everything right, ten Hag, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. He's annoyingly doing a really good job. Like a really good job. I think he does stuff really well on the field, off the field, understands the club. And yeah, he's ticking the boxes. But it's just funny from a sort of like PR standpoint. There've been other managers who've likely gone to dinner with Sir Alex Ferguson. But if they're not doing well, the picture never comes out. But now that United are doing well, sharing a wine together, the past and the future, whatever.
Exactly.
Finally, Mike Mignon is back in full training with AC Milan. How long was he out for, Jules?
A really long time, because he got injured with France in the September international break. So we thought initially that it would be okay. It was a calf injury, except that it was not okay. He missed the World Cup, of course.
With a calf injury for that?
Yeah, it's really weird. Complications and everything. Now he's back, and maybe at the best time for Milan, fighting for that top four place finish in Serie A. Obviously, I would expect him to be okay for the Spurs tie in 2 weeks' time. So coming back at the right time. Somehow, someone thought it was a good idea to put on a play about Gareth Southgate's sort of penalty process with England and why he like reinventing that team. Nathan, will you go to see it?
Well, the question is, after I get my two tickets, will you go with me?
No chance. No thanks.
Don't be salty. I read up on this and it's interesting. I don't know how many people will engage with it, but you know, there's a bigger topic around this. But now's not the time to talk about that. More great news for French football, Jules. And for Chelsea, N'Golo Kanté is back in full training.
Yeah, that's right, Nedim. He was there with the team yesterday. He'd been on his own for a little bit on the pitch before. Back, I think they will take their time just to make sure he's fully ready to be ready to come back after that big hamstring injury. But just to see him on the pitch with everybody else and how much he could bring to that team when fully fit was great to see.
Absolutely.
One of your former clubs, Nedim, QPR, have announced the appointment of Gareth Ainsworth as their new manager. Are you happy?
Happy.
That face is no.
No, it's not like anything against him. It's just the fact that they've had three managers this season already.
Yeah.
And this is given the fact that they were top of the championship table at the start of October and they're sinking like a stone. So I think the change happened. And nobody wants change like that, but here's a familiar face for the fans. I think he'll probably try and drive something in with the players. And
yeah, he played for
Yeah, players. That goes along. I think that goes a long way with that fan base. You know, when things get tough, they want to see something that feels familiar. So good luck to them, good luck to him. I think it is a tough job because there's a real mix of like really young players with potential and the idea that they want to go up. So maybe confuse all that together, streamline it, and this season seems like it's gone, but you know, hopefully can be in there for
still
a few
quite
years.
Tight, isn't it, in the championship?
Not where they are not anymore, they are. No. Not where they are. You spoke a bit too soon. So Jules, the new MLS season starts on Saturday. Woo! And there are now even more things to be excited with.
Yeah, because they changed a few things. First, there's a new team. There's a new franchise, St. Louis. So there will be 29 teams now. And they've changed a little bit the format for the playoff. As you know, in American sport, you go through the playoff. They've extended the format. So you had seven teams in each conference in the last few seasons. Now it will be up to nine. And so you'll have like a wild card playoff, if you want, between the teams that finish eighth and ninth to go into the playoff. And then the first round of playoff is as the best of three, which I love.
You say best of three?
Yeah, so home game. If you win that home game, then you go away.
Yeah.
If you win the away tie, like, you know, you're good. But if the other team, the away team wins their home tie, Then you've got a third game.
So it's not an aggregate score?
No.
Really?
Yeah, so it's good, isn't it?
Do you know what all this is? With the MLS, like, they're so, because the league's so young, they can create new rules exactly. every single year.
It's quite cool, I think, because, you know.
It's cool for that audience.
Don't you think you would like it? So, like, you know, City beat United in the first game, United with the second game.
You can't bring change into European football and have people accept it. That's the thing, because everyone's so conservative by nature.
Yeah, true.
Like, I get it. I've lived over there. I've played it.
Yeah.
It fits in line with all the other American sports. It's really exciting. But if you talk about, say, a team that finishes ninth, winning everything, that will blow the minds of people who are over here. You know what I mean? And it's cool. Like, that's America. I like the fact that they try and be creative, make it more entertaining, keep games exciting, make every game feel like it matters. But just like that thing about, you know, the aggregate score doesn't matter. Aggregate scores matter. We had people fighting over away goals like 2 years ago when that changed.
True. So, but it's like goal difference in your league table.
Yeah.
Some people said that it should not matter.
I like it for the MLS. You even try and bring in one change to the Premier League or other European leagues, and that's, you fall flat on your face.
Good luck to every team, and St. Louis especially, of course.
Good luck to Real Salt Lake.
Ah, here we go.
There we go. That's the main thing. That's the main thing, my friend.
Of course. John Motson, the voice of football, or one of the voices, if you want, of football here in this country, in England, for the last 50 years, passed away today, Nathan.
Yeah, he did. He just passed away on the way into the studio, and it's a very sad day because he unites a lot of people.
Yeah,
I think he did it for 50 years,
yeah.
And is the voice of one of the most prominent shows. You're talking about Match of the Day, thinking about cup finals, and some of our most vivid memories whilst being in England of those cup finals feature his voice being there. He's like a... He brings a sense of familiarity to great moments, and those moments are the ones why you love the game today. So when somebody like that passes away, you can't picture anyone ever filling the void, but you are very, very grateful for the memories that he's left, and that's all across the board. In this day and age, people say, oh, you know, you're biased against my team, biased against that. Nah, John Motson was John Motson. Yeah. You know, an absolutely incredible person. He was incredible with his job, and he'll be sorely, sorely missed.
Yeah.
And Jules, Barcelona, the referee scandal continues, huh?
You know what? I think this is one of the biggest scandals in European football history, or certainly the last 20 years or so. We've had scandals in Germany with referees, in Italy, of course, with the Calciopoli. And this one, and we learn more things. There's new development every day coming on how much money they pay the guy who was the vice president of the Referees Association in Spain. Originally for, like, just to give advice, you know, for some reports, and actually clearly there was something else in there, some sort of lobbying or influence, whatever you want to call it. La Liga is saying that, Javier Tebas saying that Joan Laporta has to go, the Barcelona president. There's all the other clubs from La Liga, from the top, you know, saying, like, we need answers now. We need to know exactly what happened. We need to know why Barca paid that guy so much money, and we're talking like 7 million euros. Over all those years, you know, what was it for, really? What was it to get? You know, to get advantages from referees? Was it to get all that kind of stuff? So this is crazy,
is
really.
Is it one of those things where it's immoral and not illegal, or is it both?
It looks both, to be fair.
Okay.
You can't pay... After they stopped working with him in 2018, they use another former referee to help, you know, with new decisions, for example, you know, all of that. They can come and talk to your players, your coaches, anything you want. I think they paid it something like 25,000 euros a year or 50,000 euros a year. They paid that guy half a million a year.
Inflation. It's just inflation.
Cost of living.
Yeah, the cost of refereeing crisis. This is the way it goes.
Oh my word, I think this is not the last time we hear about this story. Leeds finally have a new manager, Nathan, and it's Javi Gracia, the former Watford coach. He was not their first choice, as we know, maybe not even second or third, but he's here now, so will it be good?
That thing about not being first choice, hopefully it doesn't matter.
But if he start losing, we're going to keep throwing it at him.
You weren't even supposed to be here anyway. But then what do you do when the guy who you did want would also go through the same problems?
True.
I think... It's obviously a very, very tough job, but the fact is, down there, you don't need to be the best, you just need to be better than three other teams. I think that's the mentality.
Yeah.
And he's not had a long-term sort of like situation with a club for a long time, but he has kept Watford up in the past, got them to the FA Cup final.
Yeah.
So that's a positive image to have of a manager as he comes to your football club. I believe he'll give it a go, but I don't know how that's going to finish down there, but no, good luck to him.
It's quite fascinating that.
Yeah, good luck to him, especially as the 10th choice, whatever you say. Amancio Amaro, one of Real Madrid legends and the club's honorary president, passed away on Monday, Jules.
Yeah, really sad news, Nathan. I mean, he was 83 years old. He won 9 La Liga titles in the 60s, pretty much, early 70s as well. And he was very much involved with the club. We saw Benzema and the players dedicating him the win against Liverpool on Tuesday night as well. So our thoughts are obviously with the Real Madrid family and Amaro's family too. That's all we have time for today. Nathan, thank you so much for coming again. It was a blast. Gab will be back on Monday for a big show, because you've got Le Classic in France, you've got the Madrid derby, you've got Spurs against Chelsea in the Premier League. Big games all around Europe, and we will debrief all of that on Monday show. Until then, as Gab always say, love yourself, love your neighbour, love your game, or something like that.